No growth, rising rate of unemployment, high fiscal deficits, high and rising debt, an increased depreciation of the cedi, high cost of food, housing and utilities, and high non-performing loans, amongst others, are symptoms of deeper structural problems that will require a range of reform, beginning immediately and spanning the short, medium, and long terms. We are going to have to implement some tough, prudent, and innovative policy to get out of this financial cul-de-sac and rescue this economy, restore fiscal discipline and debt sustainability, as well as increase economic growth. It gives me no joy to tell the story of the economy as it is, as we inherited. Too much time, energy, and resources were spent in the past, in my view, without a deliberate, conscious assessment of their impact on jobs and whether or not we were spending wisely to improve the lives of the people, communities, and businesses. But I was not elected by the overwhelming majority of the Ghanaian people to complain. I was elected to fix what is broken, and my government and I are determined to do just that. At the beginning of March, the Minister for Finance will come to this House to lay out in the national budget the details of our economic policy and the clear roadmap that we have laid out for taking the country out of its current predicament and onto a sustainable path of recovery, jobs creation, and prosperity. I am absolute in my confidence that we have the program, the competence, the commitment, and the goodwill of the people to turn things around. The conditions in our country demand that government machinery functions efficiently and at full force, and that nothing is left on autopilot. The conditions demand that all of us, each and every one of us, tackle every task before us with speed and dedication. To give a fair account of the state of our nation, I say nothing new or dramatic when I tell this House that the economy of our country is in a bad way. After all, it's true. You know it's true. In the run-up to the recent elections, I said so often and loudly. Some 6 weeks after taking over the reins of government, it gives me no pleasure to have to say that our worst fears have been confirmed, plus a few additional unpleasant surprises as well. Many get quite lost when economists start rattling figures and statistics. I will not try to bore you with a lot of figures, but I hope you will bear with me as I have to put certain essential facts before our country. You would recall that notwithstanding the fact that the previous government had more than 10 times the financial resources than any other government since independence, its management of our economy in the run-up to the 2012 presidential and parliamentary elections resulted in a quagmire that necessitated the urgent intervention of the International Monetary Fund, IMF, in 2014. The IMF program negotiated was ostensibly to restore fiscal discipline, debt sustainability, and increase economic growth. The previous government promised Ghanaians that the reckless public expenditure that characterized the 2012 election year would not be repeated in 2016. The promises to the Ghanaian people were, however, not kept. In fact, virtually all the targets under the IMF program as of December 2016 have been missed. Fiscal indiscipline once again reared its head in the 2016 election year. Total projected expenditure for 2016 was 43.9 billion cedis, that is 26% of GDP. But actual expenditure amounted to 50.3 billion Ghana cedi, 30.2% of GDP. The full facts of the situation have not been put before the Ghanaian people. It appears from what we are finding out that some 7 billion cedis of arrears and outstanding payments circumvented the very public financial management system that was put in place to prevent such occurrences. These expenditures are being currently audited. The increasing fiscal deficits were financed by increased borrowing. As at the beginning of 2009, Ghana's total debt stock was 9.5 billion cedi. By the end of 2016, the debt stock has ballooned to 122 billion cedi. Ghana's debt stock now stands at 74% of GDP after all the previous denials to the contrary. More debt was accumulated by the previous government in the last 8 years than all other governments put together since independence. In fact, 92% of Ghana's total debt stock was incurred in the last 8 years under the previous government. The interest costs on this debt have also increased and will amount to an estimated 14.1 billion cedis in 2017. The reality of the state of Ghana's public finances today are quite stark. Today, as a result of policy choices, we find ourselves in a situation where Ghana's total revenue is consumed by three main budgetary lines: wages and salaries, interest payments and amortization, and statutory payments. These three items alone account for 99.6% of government revenue. This means that anything else that government has to do outside of these lines will have to be financed by borrowing or aid. There's practically no fiscal space left. The persistent resort to borrowing for any additional expenditures to meet the aspirations of our people is also not sustainable. We cannot continue this way with our public finances. And I will not allow this economy to collapse under my watch. We will reduce significantly the fiscal deficit this year. We have inherited a heavily indebted energy sector with a net debt reaching $2.4 billion as of December 2016. I have to point out the alarming fact that $800 million of this debt is owed to local banks, which threatens their stability and that of the whole financial sector. Indeed, the huge indebtedness of the energy sector constitutes the single major hurdle to Ghanaians enjoying reliable and affordable electricity supply. There has been some improvement in the power supply since November last year, but the challenges facing Ghana's power sector are far from over. The key problem is cost. We produce power from Akosombo at 3 US cents per kilowatt hour. The marginal price for businesses is an effective 42 cents, more than 10 times the average tariff in West Africa. This makes it very difficult to start or run a business here and be competitive. The cost of energy destroys businesses large and small. It is the bane of the vulcanizer, the tailor, the dressmaker and the hairdresser, the carpenter and the wayside fitting mechanic. It destroys jobs. It compounds poverty. The current state of the energy situation in our country is unsatisfactory. The problems are enormous, but Mr. Speaker, we must and we will confront them. I am proposing a number of policy interventions. We will improve on transparency in tariff setting and introduce a new tariff policy that will reclassify consumer categories in order to protect lifeline and strategic industrial consumers. We will also reduce significantly some of the levies and taxes on the tariff. As of the end of 2016, the Electricity Company of Ghana, ECG, had signed 43 power purchase agreements, whilst a further 23 were under discussion. Government is conducting a review of all the power agreements entered into by the previous government in order to prioritize, renegotiate, defer, or cancel outright if necessary in the national interest. Overall, we began to develop a national electricity master plan, which will also explore the benefits of listing VRA and GRIDCO on the stock exchange. Mr. Speaker, my government will enforce the procurement law. We will insist on open and competitive bidding for power capacity procurement. This will not only reduce the cost of power projects and ensure value for money, but will also address the problem of unplanned procurement. Government will encourage increased private sector investment in utility-scale solar and wind energy projects, as well as accelerate the development of mini-grid solutions in off-grid and island communities for lighting, irrigation, and other economic activities. We will consequently review the Renewable Energy Act to provide further incentives to attract the private sector to invest. The Ghana Compact 2 program has officially come into force. Both parties to the compact, the governments of Ghana and the United States of America, are committed to complying with their obligations. However, the implementation of Ghana's commitments has faced some challenges due to disagreements between stakeholders, particularly between labor, ECG, and the Millennium Development Authority, MIDA. We need further dialogue on the key issues that have generated these disagreements. We are aware that these discussions should be concluded urgently in order to arrive at the decisions that will allow for its implementation. We expect that all stakeholders will discuss these issues dispassionately and transparently to ensure that all concerns are adequately addressed. Mr. Speaker, it is not an original statement, but it is a true statement. Education is the key. Education holds the key to the rapid development of our country. It holds the key to a better understanding and accommodation with our environment. It equips us with the skills required to deal with the world. Education holds the key to the prosperous and happy Ghana we all want and deserve. Luckily, there's consensus amongst us on the need to provide quality education to all of Ghana's children. If I'm in a hurry, I'm in a hurry to ensure that every child born in this country attends school from kindergarten to senior high school. In other words, that is the basic education that each child is required to receive. To reform the basic school curricula with emphasis on literacy, numeracy, and creative skill. And just in case there's anyone left in this country who has not heard yet, free SHS starts with the 2017-2018 entrance into the public SHS. We shall embark upon a vigorous expansion and re-equipping of technical, vocational, and agricultural schools, and line all TVET under the Ministry of Education to ensure standardization. The teaching of mathematics and science will take pride of place in all schools as we aim to make understanding of the scientific basis of life a central plank in our schools. We'll thus make the use of ICT a central feature of our national life. Mr. Speaker, my government shall place teachers at the center of quality education and encourage professionalism amongst them. There will have to be some legislative reforms to ease some of the bottlenecks at the district level of supervision. By the way, teacher trainee allowances will be restored. Yeah. We shall restore the National Health Insurance Scheme to Get Health. And yes, the Minister for Finance will restore the allowances to trainee nurses in the budget. Mr. Speaker, government will work with Parliament to pass the Affirmative Action Bill to increase women's involvement in decision-making at all levels and enable us to achieve our current objective of 30% participation of women in public appointments. Mr. Speaker, the time has come to enforce the Disability Act and ensure its compliance, which will begin with access to public buildings for the physically challenged. The Minister for Local Government will also see to the implementation of the District Integrated Social Services Program for children, families, and vulnerable adults. Presently, Mr. Speaker, about 3,000 Ghanaian soldiers are involved in peacekeeping operations around the globe. We need to do more to keep their morale high and empower them. We have decided that they should be paid their allowances at post and not on their return. I'm glad to say that this new regime of payment has been applied to the case of the Gambian deployment. Mr. Speaker, it gives me great pleasure to be able to inform the House that the outstanding arrears of $13 million for all peacekeeping personnel have been cleared by my government. And the contingents in the Gambia have been paid all their allowances in full. And the contingents in the Gambia have been paid all their allowances in full. I have asked the Minister for Defense to come shortly before Parliament and make a statement on the Gambian deployment. There are serious difficulties facing our armed forces that are not unlike those facing other parts of our public sector. Overcrowded and inappropriate accommodation for personnel, inability to pay food and utility bills, and threats from providers to cut supplies. These are the everyday stories in all departments, and our armed forces face the same problems. It is a regrettable state of affairs that will not continue under my administration.
On agriculture, the president hinted government's commitment to promote all-year farming and promised an increase in public investment in the sector.
I believe the starting point in turning around our fortunes must be with agriculture. Unfortunately, the state of agriculture in our country right now is not good. Farmers are left on their own. It is not surprising, therefore, that food prices are high and we're having to import almost everything we eat. And yet, agriculture provides the best opportunity to use modern methods to change the lives of many within the shortest possible time. We aim to popularize farming by encouraging many people to take it up as a full or part-time activity. We have decided to embark on a program to provide water to enable all-year farming. We're calling it the One Village, One Dam policy. It is a program that I expect will rapidly get the support of the population and should help to transform food insecurity in our country. The three northern regions in particular will benefit from the availability of water to enable all-year farming so that the enforced yearly migration can be minimized. I look forward to an increase in public investment in agriculture starting from the first budget of my government. We must reverse the unfortunate trend of the past 8 years, which saw a regular decrease in public investment in the sector that provides a living for the majority of our people.